come alive, come alive in my body. Dream, come alive, come alive in my body.
Hey there, this is Molly Patrick from Clean Food Dirty Girl, and you are listening to episode 6 of the Clean Food Dirty Girl podcast. All right, so check it out. Do you know those people who you're just kind of drawn to? Like, you just want to be around them because they have this energy about them that just, it just feels good. You just want to be in their presence. And okay, I'm not talking about wanting to like stalk somebody. That could have sounded, that was going in a creepy direction. And I'm not talking about stalking. Like, don't stalk people. That's not it. But those people who just have this openness, I guess that's what it is, that trait that you can sense from somebody. And it's like they have this open heart and you can just feel their energy flowing and their love kind of radiating from them. And that is exactly how I feel about Erica Williams. She has that thing. Erica has been in our community for a while, and back in August of 2020, we hopped on Zoom and we had a chat for the blog, and it was an amazing talk. We connected on so many things. So Erica chose to stop drinking. I chose to stop drinking. It had been 4 years for her last year and 5 years for me. So we really had a lot to talk to say about that. We talked about death. We talked about bodies. We talked about plants. We talked about her running. She is one of those runners that does those amazing races that you go for many hours and all through the night. And it's like 24 hours. She's still running 24 hours, 48 hours. There it is. 72 hours. She's still running. It'll be snowing and she's running. It'll be raining and she's running. And then she like takes a break to get warm and eat something. And then she's off again, like all through the night. It's ridiculous. I don't know how she does it. I'm so in awe of that, because if I have to run to my mailbox, I'm going to be really grumpy about it. So I don't know. She's just really inspiring and she's a badass. And I wanted to bring this chat to the podcast so that in case anyone missed it, or we have new people who haven't had the opportunity to listen to this yet or to watch it on our blog, now you can listen to it on the podcast and maybe like batch some plants and listen to Erica and I have a talk. So she said something during the talk that I had to write down and tell you because it was so powerful. So she said, and I'm quoting here, quoting her, she said, "Not drinking didn't become this magical thing where all of a sudden my life was better, but it gave me the courage to create a life that I didn't want to escape from." Oh, and I was like, yep, that's it. That's it. Goosebumps, chills. Yes, I just felt that so much. I thought that was such a on point thing that you discover when you go through any big change, right? Any big change that we go through, it's not, none of it is going to make our life all of a sudden magical and perfect, but it will contribute to a life that you don't want to escape from, and a life that you don't need that thing that used to make it okay. Right. And I mean, I can just relate to that so much. And when she said that, yes, that was it. I was like, preach. So there's a lot of nuggets and wisdom in this, in our chat. So I hope that you enjoy it. And Erica, if you're listening to this, I love you and you're amazing. And I hope to talk with you soon. And in the show notes of this episode, there is another chat that I had with Erica, and that sends you to the blog if you want more. And I might bring that one to the podcast as well. But if you want it before then, check it out, get inspired, and be ready to, I don't know, just live your like best life, not because it's magical and perfect, but because it's life and we get to experience it. So enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
America Williams. I live in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, originally. I'm one of three daughters from my mother. I'm a twin, so I'm a twin sister, which is a lot of fun. And I went away to boarding school for high school, which was really kind of, I think, changed the trajectory of my life. I like to say that, like, I'm the product of a lot of, like, care and attention of people. And it really started through the process of, like, discovering that there were these things called boarding schools out there that you didn't get sent to for being bad, that were like, you know, trying to expand your horizons and enrich your life in other ways. So it was like super great opportunity. My twin sister stayed home, so we're also an interesting study in nature versus nurture. You know what I mean? Like, we're twins, and like, I went away and she stayed home. I like to say she had like a bit of a detour, but from boarding school, I went to California for boarding school. So Ohio to California. And that was pretty incredible because the school called Thatcher has a horse program and a camping program. So learned a lot about the outdoors and started kind of like being really exposed to different sort of things. Maybe that probably planted the seed for trail running a bit, maybe really early on, but I certainly was not a runner. I did track for one day. I showed up to track practice and they're like, okay, run, run. And I'm like, you mean all we do is run? And they were like, yeah, it's track. And I was like, I got to find something else to do. So I like figured out how to, I think I did an independent project where I wrote a play and I cast the senior guy. I was a sophomore. I cast the guy that I was in love with, who was a senior, in a kissing scene. So
nicely
already plotting and sort of figuring out the connections early on. And then, so after, high school, I went to New York City. I went to Barnard College and sort of lived in the city after college and bounced around through different jobs I started out as a writer, and then I became like a graphic designer editor. And then that kind of just morphed into, eventually I was a production director for a fashion magazine, but I'm like the least fashionable person ever. But it just just a crazy career in New York. And then I think I was like, New York is for the rich or the young, right? And I'm not rich and I'm not getting younger. It's time to figure out what the next step is. And so I'd started playing tournament Scrabble. Tournament Scrabble's a thing.
Wow.
Yes, it's crazy. I've played Scrabble all over
the world. Actual
tournaments. Yeah. So there's like ratings. I don't even know what my rating would be anymore. It's on like a 2,200 point scale. I mean, all over the world, Scrabble. So I've been playing a couple of Scrabble tournaments, and I met a guy playing Scrabble and totally platonic. And I was like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out what I'm going to do. He said, move to Chicago and we can become Scrabble champions together. And I moved to Chicago. I met him in January. I moved to Chicago in May. And so like we had like our own rooms and we were going to become Scrabble champions. And then we became romantically involved. That kind of like went on for 10 years. We broke up a few years ago through a lot of kind of ups and downs. And I got sober in that time and just really like I started working for Amazon. We moved to Louisville, Kentucky because I'd been chasing our favorite band, My Morning Jacket. Check out My Morning Jacket. I've seen them 80 times. And so, yeah, so just ended up in Kentucky with Amazon and then kind of bounced around. I'm in Lexington now. I moved here when I took a job with customer service, met my husband and started running my ass off. So in a nutshell, it's a big old ball of stuff.
That's a very interesting, like there's so much to unpack there. That is so, okay. So the tournament Scrabble for one. So are you on Words with Friends? And
I don't play,
do they hate? No, that's like so amateur probably.
No, I don't. I just don't do much with Scrabble anymore. I bounce around different subcultures. So I'm really hoping that running sticks because like I get really like in depth with something. I'm like all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And then when it's over, you know, I pack it up and I don't really deal with it anymore, but I still keep the friends I made. So yeah. I don't do Words with Friends. I'm just kind of, I don't even play Scrabble at home anymore. Like I don't own
a
Scrabble.
You're kind of over it. That part.
There was a lot of Scrabble.
Okay.
There's enough games.
That phase is over.
Yeah, definitely.
I like how like your whole story that you told me, and like my first question was, do you play with Words with Friends? Because I'm imagining playing with you and getting my ass beat. So your kind of gateway into eating a whole food plant-based diet was running for you. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. I've been playing around with plant-based, I think probably for a while. I mean, think back to, there was a point in Chicago where I kind of was like, I need to pull myself together. I was about 256 pounds. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of eating and drinking and not feeling great. And this is going to sound very strange, but I met up with these, I started kind of cyber stalking this group of Black female triathletes in Chicago called the Soul Tri Sisters. I really wanted to have some Black girlfriends. Like, I didn't have a lot of Black girlfriends in my life. And so I was like, and I wanted to be sort of active. And so I like started, I got into their Facebook group, and I was like, oh, okay. Like a little intimidated, but I'm like, I didn't know how to swim then. That was about 2013, 2012. I didn't know how to swim, and I didn't have a bike. So I was like, well, I can run. And so I would like just show up and like kind of run around and try to hang out and meet these women. And so one of the women was vegetarian or vegan. I'd done a few vegetarian stints in high school, but just started reading about, like, I did more reading about running back then than I actually ran. But, you know,
sort of start somewhere, right?
I want to learn everything about it before I actually just go do it.
Yes.
But yeah, and so repeatedly kept hearing that, like, recovery, that plant-based diets were great for recovery. Mm. And my first race, I did a 5K and then I did a 24-hour ultra marathon. So
that's a lot.
I'm a little weird. Well, the thought was you can stop anytime in a 24-hour race. There's no fixed distance. So if you want to walk the whole thing and then, you know, walk one lap an hour, you could do that. Okay. But it was just much more loose. But so ultra, so now I'm looking at like reading materials about ultra marathons and ultra races, and you just hear it again and again from different athletes. And then I think I found like No Meat Athlete, and I was like, this is really interesting. And so started a flirtation with plant-based.
Okay. So that was sort of the trajectory of that. So was that something that was like, how did you eat growing up?
So growing up, it would be like a hamburger helper.
Okay.
Tuna helper,
standard,
you know,
yeah, pretty
definitely. A lot of fried chicken, a lot of, you know, like big holiday meals. Yeah, certainly. And then I think like high school, we had definitely better access to more varied variety of foods. Then in college, I started, I had a friend in high school who was a vegetarian, and I lived with her the summer between, she's actually in the group as well. I lived with her the summer between our high school and college years. And so kind of was vegetarian because the house was vegetarian. And to this day, we still laugh. At one point, I snuck out in the middle of the night to get chicken. And only after we left did her father find these chicken bones underneath the bed. I have to have some chicken. I can't be a vegetarian. So, So, you know, started really then kind of playing with it. But once I started running, really started understanding and feeling, right? So feeling the difference of again, I was a lot heavier when I started this process. And so it would hurt to, like, you know, the next day after even just doing like a 3-mile run, everything would hurt. I was trying to do CrossFit and rowing in those days, but it'd be like, I'd work out and I'd just feel so beat down that it would take 2 to 3 days before I was like not sore enough to work out again. And then I could just remember, I sort of remember the first week of being plant-based. I ate these like hummus and sprout and tomato sandwiches on Ezekiel bread. I thought I was being really good. And, but I felt so much better, right? Like I felt like I could run back to back. I mean, it wasn't fast and it wasn't far, but I didn't feel so beat down that I couldn't move the next day. So I was like, hey, there's something to this.
Mm-hmm. And had you, so you had stopped drinking at that point. Is that right? No,
I was definitely still drinking. Okay. And so that's what I say, the flirtation, right? Like we know what's good for us, right? But there's so much other stuff wrapped up in food, wrapped up in liquor that like it was years, right? So the story, you know, I'm talking to you about 2012, 2013, but it wasn't really until 2016 and 2017 that I started to unlock all the baggage that was associated with these things. And so I think that's sort of the ping pong that kept happening. Like I feel good, but I'm not dealing with all the stuff that's making me keep turning to these things. So willpower only lasts so long. So if you're not dealing with the stuff underneath, you know, it's gonna boomerang right back. So I didn't understand any of that though, right? I honestly thought it was a physical journey. I thought like I want to lose some weight. In order to do that, I'm gonna run. And it wasn't like I wanted to be a runner. I would have done anything that would have been like 1 + 1 = like, you know, I knew that there was no magic pill. I'm a smart woman, but I still was just not, the motivation was wrong. And then when I really fell in love with running and running became the goal, all of a sudden, like it wasn't a chore to eat right. And the weight started coming off without even thinking about it. Right. It was just like, I want to do what makes me feel good and makes me run long. So it was a very long evolution with a lot of boomeranging back. And I think like, so that's like, the drinking piece. So it's like, you know, but you don't know.
You don't want to know.
That's it. You know?
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, it is. So I think, you just summed it up so well, because I quit drinking as well. I just have been sober now 5 years. But so for you, because you talked about like, there's all this baggage that you kind of have to face. Like you can be motivated by this. You can kind of start in this way, but at some point you get to the point where you're like, okay, that stuff is going to come out. So did you, like, were you on a quest to like, okay, I'm going to tackle my bullshit, I'm going to tackle my demons, or did that kind of happen as a result of making these changes?
No, so none of it, like the changes even came about. I think the biggest catalyst was, so I told you I moved to Chicago to be with Scrabble Man. And so that was about a 10-year long relationship that, you know, maybe 4 years in, I kind of knew was not, you know, that wasn't my person. And then, but we were so, our lives had been so intertwined and we had a lot of fun together. Like he was really a best friend, but like not a partner. And so like you bury that, right, for like 6 years. So I'm going to get high. I'm going to drink. I'm going to eat. Like I'm going to just do all these things that distract me, numb me. And my life wasn't terrible, right? I'm bubbly and outgoing like I am now. So on the surface and outside, it was like, damn, she's got like everything. And then I felt like I would come home and just be like, just not myself. I never felt like truly at peace. And so it really came to a head. Like I said, we moved to Louisville from Chicago and thought like, then we chased my morning jacket around 1 year. We saw them 35 times in 2015. And so all of a sudden, like my life was focused on the escape, right? So I'm working to pay for this escape, which is following this band around. And so when we moved again and then the band stopped touring and it's like, now I have to like be with you in my regular life. This sucks. And so like we had a fight and it was like, you know, we should just break up. And you know, the fights were always like that. And I went, yeah, we should. And the moment I said it, it was like just that weight. You hear that. And it's true. All of a sudden I was like, I don't even care like what the path through is, but that it's done. I went out and ran for the first time in 2 years that night just to get out of the house. And it wasn't pretty, but I came back and I just felt like super exhilarated. And so, I had stopped drinking though a year prior. So it still took a year of not drinking for me to unpack the different pieces. So that's the other thing, right? Not drinking didn't become this magical thing where all of a sudden my life was better, but it gave me the courage to create a life that I didn't want to escape from. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like waking up. I tell people, you know, some people who are in recovery programs, I did it on my own a little bit. Like like a few, I quit because I wanted to wear a bikini, right? Thanks, my morning jacket. I wanted to wear a bikini at my morning jacket's one big holiday. It was this Mexican vacation, 5 days, 4 nights. They do 3 concerts and bring down all these other bands. And I was like, man, I want to wear a bikini. I'm a grown woman. I've never done this. And so I have been doing CrossFit and other things and trying to eat right, still plant-based, but still flirting. And I wasn't seeing results. And I had a coach that said, I did a food diet. It's the drinking. And I was like, well, I'll stop drinking for like 6 or 7 weeks. I'll stop drinking for 8 weeks is what it was. Because I fully plan to drink again. We're going to an all-inclusive resort in Mexico to hear our favorite band on the beach. I'm going to be drinking, right? And so maybe it was hard. It sucked. And I hid out at home by myself because, like, our whole life had really been built around these, like, we're going to go out and have fun. And the interesting thing is, like, as you change, you think you have these bonds with certain people and that, like, this is your tribe. You stop drinking and you change. And even though, you know, I'm not like preaching to anyone, my presence alone is enough to make people start thinking about like the things they haven't confronted. So a lot of stuff got unpacked during that, but like maybe three weeks in, I was like, oh my God, like, is this real life? I the only thing I can think of how to describe it was that I had put glasses on for the first time. The edges of the universe were sharp and crisp. And it was like I was seeing such vibrant colors. And it was just real life. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. I'm like getting like teary-eyed because I feel so far away from it now, right? I can't, I don't have that sense of revelation. Like, I miss that a little bit, but it was so powerful that it was the first time I said, I know I said to myself, I never said I'm going to quit drinking. I still don't say that now. I just said, I won't drink again until I encounter a situation that will be improved by alcohol or that could make me feel the way that this feels. And now, you know, it's almost 4 years later and I haven't had that feeling yet. I've been through some tough stuff, some fun stuff. And, you know, I think a month or two after I got sober, my dog died. And that was like just the really hardest thing I had gone through to that point. And it never occurred to me to pick up a drink. And so I've just been like, I never say never, but I just haven't encountered anything in life that's like alcohol is going to make this better, whether it be a celebration or whether it be, you know, a mournful, sad event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love hearing it. It sounds so much like my story. Like, I can relate to everything you're saying. I mean, it really is like a waking up. I mean, and how you describe like putting on glasses and just, I mean, that's exactly how it is. And it's scary and beautiful and exhilarating. And it's like, it's a ride. It is a ride.
Yeah.
And so I love this because it's reminding me, because I've been doing this for a long time now. I've been sober 5 years. I eat really healthy. I have my smoothies. I have my juice. I have my meal plan food, but you know, this is a journey. I mean, it's such a journey and it's just like, nobody just suddenly wakes up and this is like, their life is all of these plants and, you know, living this really healthy lifestyle. Like, it is such a journey and you just, so many things like you plant the seed for, and then it might not be years until you're like, oh, piecing all of the things together. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So it's a reminder to people to like, this doesn't happen overnight. And like, it reminds me that there is no like goal, but it's everything that you learn in this beautiful process about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And I sound like I know that, but this year really kind of made me like, I'm slowly getting back to that. Right. So last year I ran 2019 miles in the whole year. Right. So that's like almost 10 miles a day. I did a 100-mile race.
I'm trying to like, I'm like, I've ran zero. Yes, but that's amazing.
It's been, so last year was this year where like, so I think the end of 2018. So I've been on my own now. End of 2017, I'm on my own now. Like I'm single, I'm building a life of my own in a new city. And I started, that's when I started really diving into and finally committing to Clean Food Dirty Girl. Mm-hmm. There was also Clean Food Sober Girl, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So there was that group too. And so that's what really drew me in at first to kind of, cause I was, did a lot of kind of connecting with an online sober community, both through your group and then through Instagram, like a sober as fuck, hashtag. And so building this community around myself. And so like, now all of a sudden it's like, I'm focused on me. I don't have to take care of anybody else. And so I was prepping. Like I can think of like, I think of like five of the meals that I prepped during that time are still like my staples and that like, nice. I like feel like comfort food that I still come back to. And I was eating then. And then on the other side, like I call it my rice and beans kick. Like I was just in this rice and bean zone for about 6 months where I basically had like the Soylent drinks. You know, I was also trying to like maximize like productivity, reading about like, maybe I'll have a uniform. So I save my mental fatigue. So I'm going to drink this drink so I don't have to think about food. That didn't last long, of course. But so I was on this rice and beans kick. But at that time is when I really dove into like, plant-based, and I got really lean. Like, I mean, I was at 100+ pounds lost overall, and it was like, I'm like shredded, and I think I was posting in the group like, look, and it was great, right? Like, and that, but part of that became, I was very wary or started to feel like that I was putting my identity, now I'm moving my identity into this physical thing, right? Mm. Like I'm pursuing now, like now I'm going to be hot, now I'm going to be ripped, now I'm going to be this. And it was just like, wait, now, okay, step back. And so I needed a big goal, right? And so after I broke up, after I ended that relationship, I signed up for this race called the Trans Rockies Run. It's 120 miles through the Colorado Rockies. There's about 25,000 feet of elevation gain, and it's in 6 days. And so this was literally maybe a month or two after I told you I went for that first run after we broke up, and I said, I'm going to sign up for this race. And it was December, and that race
and
was
what
the
month
following
was
August.
Okay.
The following
okay.
August. Yeah. So I got a coach. And so now all of a sudden the meal plans, and I had this coach. And so now all of a sudden all of it is focused right on this big goal, which is scary as hell, right? Like the longest run I've done in the 2 years preceding is like maybe 5 miles. And we're talking about this 20 mile per day race in the Rockies. And so it just, all of a sudden it just gave me a new clarity of focus. It took it took like a lot of my time and energy and commitment. And I started to develop this strength that now wasn't about like, I'm getting skinny and I'm doing this. It was the strength that started showing up in these other parts of my life. And it was like, now I'm kind of crushing it at work. And now I'm okay. I feel okay enough to let go of these relationships that I've been holding on to just because they, you know, been my family or this has been my people. Mm. But reclaiming that energy for myself, it all of a sudden it's like you're recycling it through yourself. You're calling back these parts of you that you've lent to other people who have no need for them anymore, right? And so you're like, come home. And I'm just getting goosebumps talking about it. So the
you're
race happened.
You're making me tear up.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's just the race happened in August of that year. And there were some hard, tough days. And I can think about, it was maybe day number 4. And we got to the top of this mountain, and I hadn't had cell phone service for like 2 days. And so, and I just started dating my husband at this time. We've been dating for a few months. And then right before August, like right in June, we kind of got serious where we're like, now we're boyfriend, girlfriend. And, so I hadn't talked to him in 2 days, and I get to the top of this mountain, and, cell phone service finally comes through, and there's this message from him, and it's super sweet. He's like, I'm really worried about you. Like, oh God. Like, and it was just, and I still have it saved. It's the only message he's ever left me. And something happened up on that mountain. Like, I felt like all, like it was finally the place I got to bury all this stuff that I'd still been carrying. Right. Like I knew it wasn't my stuff to carry anymore. But it was still kind of like following me around. I hadn't done anything that unleashed it or let it go. And I think like I was just so physically exhausted, but also incredibly inspired, right? Like day four was super hard because I got lost and I ended up adding additional like 2.5 hours. And just, it was really emotional. But like at the end of that, I was just like, that old Erica is gone, right? She's done. Like every bit of her is gone. But it wasn't like this, like, I'm somebody new or she wasn't real. It's like, thank you that Erica for carrying us, you know, thank you for protecting us through that. And now you get to go rest. And now I'm going to come and carry us the rest of the way. And so this new me, and it just, but it's the same me. It's hard to describe, but I just, I feel incredibly thankful, grateful. I just have a sense of lightness about me. Mm-hmm. And, it's super freeing. And I spend so much of my time now trying to make these connections to show people, mm-hmm. like, it doesn't mean that life, like, I'm rich. It doesn't mean that life isn't hard. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that work didn't stress me out, but I just know that none of those things are me, you know? And so it's just, I'm so incredibly grateful, and I don't think I would have ever had these lessons without getting sober. Mm-hmm. And so I shout it from the rooftops. I'm super vocal about it on my Facebook page, on my Instagram, in my work life, in my, you know, I feel like there's such still a stigma attached to sobriety. You know, when I remember when I first said I was sober, and somebody said, I saw you at a My Morning Jacket show last year. You didn't seem like you had a problem. And I was like, why do I have to have a problem to say that this isn't good in my life, right? Like, what made me stop wasn't that I was like passed out drunk and and losing my job. I was just tired of the energy that I was giving over to alcohol, mm-hmm. right? And so, that's what it was. So I'm just... Thank you for that. I'm just so grateful. It's really what it is. And it just beams out of me every day. And so I just, sometimes it's hard to like, and I don't want to keep it inside. Right. Like, I feel like some people are like too cool to be for gratitude, too cool to say that they're blessed. But I think I'm one of the most blessed people that I know. And every day I'm just thankful for it and looking for ways to pay that forward.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because it's just like, I have goosebumps. I mean, it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful just transformation, you know? And, it's about food and it's not about food, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Right. If we distill that, all those, right? We distill all that big, heavy shit down to where can I start, right? Mm-hmm. Like, right? Because that's the other thing, right? People who know me now, who didn't know me before, you know, and they see Erica, they see 2019 Erica, right? The height of her physical prowess, and she's running marathons in 4 hours and 30 minutes. And they don't know that my first marathon took me 8 hours and I was 250 pounds and it was the worst experience of my life. Like, so those people do themselves a disservice, because they look at me without knowing kind of where I've come from and go, but you don't understand, or but I can't. And I go, all it takes is all of this work will meet you where you are. Right. Yeah, food is the easiest, right? It's the easiest thing we can control. Let's not talk about giving up drinking. Let's not even talk about being perfect. So I think I told you, like, I'm an imperfect dirty, because I fell back into me. Like, so February was amazing. I had been connecting with Lindsay through through the winter. Mm-hmm. The height of my prowess, and then some health issues popped up, and I started like gaining some weight, and I was like feeling just really uncomfortable in myself, and a doctor recommended like that I get on birth control to try to control things, and then I flew off the handle, and all of a sudden I'm like a 16-year-old hormonal girl, and I just like felt so not great. And Lindsay's like, lighten up, you know. I actually reached out to her because she, you know, she's the glowing poster child of lighten up. And so I'm like, I miss my spark, Lindsay. And there's something in you that like reminds me of that spark. And she's like, go for it. And so I used to tell myself, oh, it's so expensive. But like, think about all the other investments I make in other people, the investments I make in like my you know, the outer, the physical. Mm-hmm. Why can't I take this investment in myself? And so I actually signed up in January, started February, and February was incredible. I mean, I started feeling like myself again. I, you know, have followed the daily every day, sit in front of, you know, watching the videos and feeling really great. I was down 7 pounds and then like feeling really good. And COVID came and it was like, boom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work for Amazon. And so things got really crazy. And, you know, I was working 7 days a week, probably 12 to 15 hours a day, still kind of hanging on. I still juice every day. And my husband enjoys a daily juice as well. But things just started. And I started feeling like I went from being the pinnacle of like on it, like on it across the board. And as things started to slip, I think you go, God, it's all or nothing. Right. So I can't run 10 miles a day. So I'm going to run zero. What? Oh, yeah. Go walk 1 mile. Like, and
it's not logical, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easier. Right. Yeah. And so I think, yeah. So I'm at the point now where I'm going, you don't have to do what you did, but you got to do something. So like, yeah. And again, like I feel super encouraged and I want to share with people. I'm so open. Right. And I want to live openly. Right. I'm excited about the work ahead because I've done it before. Right. And so I know it can, and I know it can be done. And this time, right. Like coming back to it with even more respect and reverence and also a commitment that I won't go off track, that I'll try really hard not to go off track. Right. That it doesn't have to be perfection, but it can't be nothing.
Like we can for sure have those thoughts of like, okay, if I can't do it all, then I'm not going to do any, but then we don't have to act on them, right? We can be like, okay, it's okay. We could just do a little bit and it's okay. And then you ultimately, and you know, you feel way better.
Way better. You know? Way better. Yeah. Yeah.
So moderation, this is what we're all, this is the key here.
If we could moderate, we'd be sober.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I just love you. I mean, really the joy that you emit and you just radiate this joy. And it comes from this place of like going through all of these discoveries, you know, and learning all of these things about you and just keeping on your path and, you know, having that be okay. The little step backs or, you know, you're dialing it in. Like I just hear you and I keep feeling you just keep dialing it in.
Yeah, we got one shot here. We don't get a do-over, right? Mm-hmm. And so I spent enough of my life, right? Years in situations that I knew were not right for me. And I'll be damned, I'm 41 years old. I'll be damned if I waste more time focused on things that don't enrich me, don't enrich the people around me, don't make my bubble better, right? So, so I just can't go back, right? And I'm just like, oh, I got so much time to make up for. And the crazy thing is, I was still, I was still this Erica. Like if you and I were talking when I was drinking Erica, I might be 80 pounds heavier, but I'd still be bubbly. I'd still have a smile. So it's just like, imagine feeling good, but then you don't realize you're feeling pretty bad, right? So you don't know. What I tell people is you don't know how bad you feel until you actually start feeling good. Mm-hmm. Right? And so life wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. I wake up every day now and I'm like, I just think about the things that have just been, that I've worked for, the things that I've been given, the opportunity. I mean, I've lived just an incredible life. And I wake up sometimes and I tell my husband, I hope everybody feels as excited and as blessed as I do on a daily basis, right? Like I want everybody to feel this because it doesn't require much, but like getting kind of outside of our comfort zones. That's where we're going to find those. And you know, it's all like, it feels all like platitudes, but it's the closest I can get to describing it. Cause it's just opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for this, you know, this kid from Cincinnati who didn't learn how to swim until 2014, who, you know, just some crazy experiences. And I've just been super lucky. So I just don't want people to close themselves off. It's really easy to do. I've seen other people do it. And I just think like, we just have to find that sense, right? That there's something in us that we just have to get to, and yes. it'll guide us to where we need to be, right? And so not perfection, right? Progress, not perfection, is what I've been telling myself over and over again. So I've been getting back to running, and it doesn't have to be long or far, but every day I'm able to put shoes on and just get out of the house is a blessing, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't have to be a marathon. So I'm just, you know, it's so much fun though, too, to rediscover it. It's scary at first, but if we show ourselves that grace, like, and just say like, hey, I get to learn. How many times have you thought if I could do this all over again, right? And now here I get to like kind of rebuild again and take what I've learned and like create this, you know, this new kind of reality for myself. I'm not going to be ultra runner Erica, but who's this new Erica going to be? Because I'm always iterating and becoming this different Erica, but we only got one life here. So we just got to try on all the different coats and all of the different us's that could be and then take those pieces and craft this just beautiful mosaic of life. And so I've been just super lucky to do that across geographies, across different like activity groups. I used to swing dance and I'm a crazy knitter now. And just, so just, I just want to more than anything tell people that I promise you your tribe is out there, but the tribe really starts here. Right. And when you kind of figure out like the person you want to be and the things you're in, it, just show yourself some grace. I think I see that over and over again, is that it's hard to start when we're beating ourselves up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And putting stuff in our way that like you said, you know, you have to access it here. And if you're doing things that are blocking that off, it's hard to find. I mean, it's there, but it's going to be hard to find. And I think as you were talking, what was coming up was like coming to things with a beginner's eye. And coming to life and coming to every day with a beginner's eye. It's like, because every day is new, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we start to come at it from this really place of, well, what can I learn today? You're going to see things in a different way, even if things feel mundane and repetitive, like so much of life seems right now because of this whole thing. But I mean, and it's beautiful because amongst all of the chaos that's going on and amongst all of the, you know, cause there's bad shit that's going on. There's some bad shit that's always gone on, but like that joy and that spark remains. I mean, we do have that in us, and you're just such a beautiful example of what happens when you tap into that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's crazy times, right? It's just super crazy times. And I think that like in the absence of answers, I don't know what the answers are to anything that's going on. In the absence of answers, I tell my husband this a lot because he gets really kind of, he can get really, really, he's an empath. He can get really overwhelmed by everything that's going on outside of. And I say, all I can do, right? Obviously I'm going to vote, but all I can do overall to affect this is make my bubble better. I volunteer in my community. I raise money for different causes that I believe in. I've done some work with Girls on the Run, which is like getting the school girls to run, and do some work with after school program in our community. And my next thing was I started knitting again when I stopped running. I learned to knit in 2009 to help quit smoking. I kept smoking through, you know, some other years. I don't smoke anymore, but I kept knitting. And so I hadn't knit in like 3 years, honestly. It was like fit Erica thought that knitting Erica was fat Erica. So I put knitting away because knitting equals fat, right? That was my blocker. I only recently kind of said that out loud, right? You know, and so then saying it out loud was kind of freeing. And I have like bins of yarn in the attic. And so I pulled some of it down. I started knitting again. And I found just this like, this soothing kind of like I can put in, instead of focusing all this effort into work where I'm going to work 16 hours, I take that energy and focus on a hard knitting pattern. And so knitting a lot of stuff that I'm not really going to keep. And people are always like, oh, I'll buy from you. And there's, the yarn alone and even your time doesn't make sense for you to sell it. But I decided I'm going to auction off most of what I knit this year for, to raise money for one of the programs I work for here. So like, actually I'm looking on my desk right now. Oh, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, I knit these Black Lives Matter mittens.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's a
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah. So, I'll be posting on Facebook and just doing it raffle style. Mm-hmm. I'll raffle a couple of different things off and then, yeah, donate the money. So I figured like that's a way I can combine like the things I'm into, helping my community. But that's how I feel like we can combat some of the feelings of like helplessness or what should I be doing. We just find ways to make our bubble better, right? And then vote and then hope that like enough people making their bubbles better, our collective bubble will be better.
Yeah. There's always something we can do, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, I think a lot of times people think about the, you know, this really big picture and also, okay, how can I fix this? And it's like, well, let's take a step back. Like, what can you do today to help somebody that isn't as privileged as you are, or that doesn't have the resources that you do? Like, let's just do that one thing. And I think you're right. I mean, cause it can be really overwhelming, but if we just dial it back and like, okay, there's always something to do.
Yeah.
You know?
That's across the board. Like, let's just start where we are. The other thing I want to share is I have this motto. And this motto has done me well probably since the time I went away to boarding school. And I tell you, and I say it out loud, and I say it out loud to myself at least once a week since the age of 13 or 14. What's the worst that can happen? When you're sitting there and you're faced with a decision that you feel really uncomfortable with outside of your comfort zone, you know, most of the things that we're faced with are not life or death choices, right? They're uncomfortable choices. They're not ideal, but what's the worst that can happen? And whether it's something as like, you know, I could think about a few weeks ago, the last thing I wanted to do, was go visit some family. And I was like, oh God, and it's going to be the whole day and we're going to do all this and, you know, sort of really kind of building it up in a really negative way. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, it's how much time, right? Like in the grand sense of things, you know, you spend 9 or 10 hours doing work you might not want to do. What's this time going to be? So you're going to go. So go, and it ends up being like just the most rewarding, enjoyable mm-hmm. time. We came back, my husband and I drove back together, and it was just a really great time for us to connect alone and reflect on like how well the trip had gone, better mm-hmm. than we had thought. And just, you know, I think like we spend so much energy, right, projecting on what that experience is going to be like, planning little thing out. And here's the thing that like, if you're committing, you're going to go, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? I have a miserable time. And it's 6 hours of discomfort and whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But we know, especially sober people, we know about boredom. We know about discomfort. Oh, yeah. We know about, you know, you work through those things without creating these escapes for yourself. So anyway, moral of the story is, what's the worst that can happen? Like live on the edge a little bit and you'll be totally surprised. And worst comes to worst, you have a good story for later, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can tell your husband, I'm never going to go with you on this trip again. Or, you know, but most of our decisions aren't life and death, but we create these frenzies for ourselves to mm-hmm. really take the focus out of like sitting with discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a big one. And you're right. I mean, when you get sober, you just have to. Because you're not going anywhere.
I'm bored as hell. What am I going to do on this city here? Like, where are we going?
Like, this sucks, you know? this sucks. And I can sit here and say this sucks for like 6 hours and it'll still suck.
So, yeah, or you can find something else to do in those 6 hours that channels that energy into something else. But yeah, I think that's probably the greatest gift of sobriety is mm-hmm. the ability to just sit with myself. That's mm-hmm. uncomfortable as hell, right? Mm-hmm. And the book I read the day before I quit drinking, I finished the day before I quit drinking is called The Untethered Soul.
Yes.
By Michael Singer.
Yes.
And so like I had really been, I think for a long time, I've been searching and mm-hmm. I think most of our searching, I'm not searching for like money. I'm not searching for reincarnation. Like I think I'm searching for just overall comfort with like death. Right. That's as blunt as you say it, right? So, but I'm just blunt, right? Because I now understand what it is. Like, because all those other things distill down to like, I've got this finite, I'm scared of losing this. Mm-hmm. And I spend so much time fixated on being scared of losing it that I'm not living it, right?
But you're not there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think like I've always kind of had this, like, I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think like, and it might not just be death, but like, it's been super comforting. Like The Untethered Soul was comforting. I've been listening to a lot of Ram Dass and super comforting and less scary the more we talk about it, and really comforting. And then finally a few weeks ago, a few months ago, it was unlocked for me, I think, finally. And I think we've been watching the show Midnight Gospel on Netflix.
Haven't watched it.
Okay, so it is a cartoon. The cartoon is produced by Pendleton Ward, who does Adventure Time, which a lot of adults are into. I never got into Adventure Time. But it's based off of Duncan Trussell's podcast. And his podcast is Duncan Trussell's Family Hour. And he does, I guess he calls himself, what are they, like psychonauts. And his mother was like a psychotherapist, but also really into like hallucinogens and unlocking. Yeah. Like, yeah. So he's got super interesting podcasts with different thought leaders and different like spiritual leaders. But the one, so they've turned those podcasts into different animated episodes. Hmm. The last episode is a podcast. His mother died of cancer, and she appeared on his podcast about 2 or 3 times after her diagnosis. Hmm. And there was one, so clips of one, and now it's been animated, but it was like just so beautiful, so moving. She was like, she was in the process of actively dying, and she was so calm, and her experience of it and her description of it was really moving. And like, of course there's that fear of just the end, but she was just, the way she embraced it and the way she talked through it, it was just really powerful. And it just really felt like, whoa, it's okay, right? Like it'll be okay. Like, let's spend more time worrying. Let's spend more time actively living, you know. And then you know, she's just talking about the gift of actively dying and being there for her family, kind of wrapping up her affairs so that they didn't have to deal with it. And I've never heard anybody talk about that like that. She even got into the nitty gritty of like trying to close out credit cards and her cable bill while she's still alive, right? So anyway, just working through those kind of things, I think like ultimately that was my big kind of, I think everything probably just connected into that fear. And so just kind of unlocking that and, you know, it's in the back of your head, but there's a sense of freedom that comes, right?
Totally. And I appreciate that so much. And I think you're right, because if you really pay attention to the fears that you have and the fearful thoughts that you tell yourself and the stories that you tell yourself. And if you really, really trace it and look at it, it's like, okay. And then if this fear happens, like, okay, what's the worst that can happen? Right. Like, and if you actually trace that back, pretty much it's always going to be to like, well, I might die. And it will always go back to death. Right. And so that's such a, and it's amazing because we're all going to die. And it's like the one thing that we're all for sure going to do. We all have it in common, but nobody is talking about it. And it's really, it's almost stigmatized. And so I think, you know, I actually signed up for this course to become a death doula this year, because I got really into the topic. I read some really fascinating books on it by Caitlin Doughty. And I don't know if you know who she is.
She's on one of those episodes of Midnight Gospel.
Okay. Yeah. So her stuff is great. And then I was like, you know, I just want to dive more into this. And so it got canceled because of COVID, but I'm going to go as soon as it opens back up. But I think that you're right. I mean, that is such an important thing to like, really ultimately at the end of the day, let's like talk about dying more. Cause the more you talk about it, it makes it like, it gives you some space to be able to like breathe around it when you talk about it.
Yeah. It's like the things we shroud in like stigma and mystery and like hushed whispers.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anybody any good. Right. And then now we're all, we all struggle alone with it. And like, imagine the power of just like having this conversation, right? You've been scared to death. Like, hey, Molly, I've been, you know, all that drinking, all that eating, all that crazy shit. Like, I'm trying to outrun death.
That's but, right.
Like, you know, and when it becomes like that, like, again, just discovering this lightness of being is really like, I told you, like when I broke up with my ex-boyfriend, like felt that lightness. And then just like every year, just kind of growing more into myself, dropping more of this earthly baggage. It sounds really crazy, but it's true. Right. And understanding, like, I think work is the best reflection of this. I was recently promoted, which is a very,
congrats.
Thank you very much. It was a very arduous process at Amazon. And so I'm super proud of that. But like, more than anything, what I'm proud of is that I've been able to affect my teammates in such positive ways where they like really trust me. And what I tell them over and over again is like, I feel unleashed at work. I found a team that fits me really well. But beyond that, I stopped taking work so personally. When I meet people and I'll say, what do you do? Right? Like that's got nothing to do with who you are. Right? When people ask me what I do, I say, I get to solve really cool problems at Amazon that make sure, you know, you get your deliveries on time. Cause that's really what I'm into is like, there's these problems that I get to solve. So I think that like, once you can take your ego out of the things, especially work is the primary, cause we spend so much time focused on work. I'm able to take feedback really, I'm able to take and act on feedback quickly because it's feedback on my work or it's feedback on ideas or it's a collaboration. It's not feedback on who I am as a person because who I am as a person is so solid. And I've been working on that over here that like, you know, this document, this paper is not going to affect me or so I'm able to take feedback in that way, but I'm also able to get creative and again, what's the worst that can happen if I share this idea with my boss's boss's boss? Like, right, he can shoot me down, but there's not, I'm untethered again, right? I'm untethered. Yeah. And so just what I found is you're scared, but actually what happens is people interact with you, people react to you differently. They sense that lightness. Mm-hmm. They sense that like confidence and they sense that kind of like, oh, right. You're on the up and up. And like, this is going to be a conversation and a discussion, not kind of a, like, you tell me what to do. And so it just radiates. And so it happens at work or it happens with relationships where you're like in being married, we got married in September. And so this is a much different relationship, right? And we're both older. We've both been married before. And, but we haven't had any like real fights because I'm a different person now. I come to it like, is this worth it? Right. Mm-hmm. In the grand scheme of things, I'm pissed off about these damn dishes, but is it really worth it? Just put the damn dishes away. So, that lightness, right. That lightness just spreads across everything. Like, not to say like, I can see how culpable I was in the problems in my previous relationship. It's really easy to say like, it's all him, but I definitely see my culpability. And I know like just looking at that old Erica and this Erica that I've learned those lessons. And so the way I interact with my husband is a lot different because I don't have that anger sort of like, you know, bubbling beneath the surface. Right. Mm-hmm. And I actively work on that, which is kind of weird. There was this anger. There was this anger through me when I drank.
Yeah.
There was an anger. And it just feels so foreign now. I think in my head, before I actually said it out loud, I kind of knew early on that I probably would not drink again, but it was super scary to say that out loud. And I was worried about what people would think or say. And so we ended up going to one big holiday where I wanted to wear the bikini. I wore my bikini and then I went back to my hotel room early every night and hid out while everybody else partied because I just couldn't, like, it was still new enough to me that like, I didn't know, I probably couldn't withstand the temptation, but it was also important enough to me that like I was going to do everything I could to give myself a fighting chance. And so I think like when we came back from that vacation, we spent another week, in Isla Blanca afterwards in a house and everybody drinking. And so after coming back from that vacation, I was like, I made it through that. I'm not going to drink again. Like, right. Like kind of having that. And then I went to like three more one big holidays and the last one, my morning jacket brought me up on stage and they're like, this is Erica. And everybody starts screaming because like they know me. And it was just like the highlight of everything. And I'm wearing this shirt that was, what was it? It was Feminist Sober Killjoy. And I have this shirt on. People were like taking pictures. It was just an amazing time. And just, it was just incredible to be able to like, you know, be who I, you know, totally authentically who I was and not kind of like ashamed and like, what a great kind of signal boost for like, look, a sober life can be fun and exciting and boring and messy and sloppy. It's going to look a lot like your life looks right now, except it'll be real and it'll be your life.
And you will like, I don't know, for me, I just, I stopped repeating all those lessons that I just, you know, didn't get over and over and over and over and over and over again.
And stop telling the same stories over and over and
over.
Yes.
Oh God. Yes.
That was the kind of like the first, like when you're like the sober person at the party and you're like, oh God, they don't remember that I already heard this story and I remember, but no one else remembers because everybody's drunk again. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Oh man.
And then I started thinking like, do I do that? I was like, did I do that?
Oh yeah. I remember thinking like when I first quit, I'm like, I didn't even know who I was. I had no idea who I was. Mm-hmm. Like I had to completely, I'm like, shit, I just like, man, because it was drinking when I was celebrating, when I was sad, when I was, you know, every single, you know, aspect. But it's, yeah, I love it because it's like, once you, regardless of what that gateway thing is for you, like whether it was running or whether it is, you know, stopping drinking or eating healthier, like that will inevitably lead to the door opening up and to the mind kind of expanding. And we can choose to get out of our comfort zone and kind of get curious about that and play with that. And then the more we do that, the more it leads us down that path.
Mm-hmm. It's like our bodies are telling us and we've sort of lost the signal, right? Through the way we grew up, through our food diets, through just our culture, right? We've lost those signals, but our body still responds to those correct signals, right? It's why we both thought that the world was sharp around the edges when we stopped drinking. Mm-hmm. It's why when we eat plant-based, like when I'm plant-based, my voice changes. Mm-hmm. Like when I stopped drinking, my voice changed, right? And so it's just like you feel good and your body's like, hey, nudge, nudge. Like, you see you see how I respond to you when you give me what I want? Mm-hmm. And then you have that cheese and then you have that run and you're, you know, phlegming and, you know, mucusy. And you're like, you see how I respond to you when you don't give me what? And we just ignore because we dulled. It's like how we forget the full signal, this, you know, the, satisfaction, signals. Am I full? Am I still? No, because we've just dulled any of those signals. But like, whether it be food, whether it be drinking, I think, like you said, once you unlock one piece that like signals, like you're like hearing that you're hearing the next thing. And I think that's what people like have a wellness story where it's not just, I've met very few people who are like, I got sober, but I still, but I don't take care of myself, like in some sort of way, like all I did was get sober and, but I have diabetes or, but I have this. It's just like, it leads to just a different search, right? Okay. I was obviously searching for something that I used alcohol. Like, so what's the search now? So, I'm thankful for the group. I've met so many great people through Clean Food Dirty Girl. I've referred a lot of my friends because I like to talk about it over and over again. And I think the most important thing or the thing I love the most about the group is just like coming back to what I said before, it meets you where you are. Like you're not the vegan police. Yeah. People don't have to be on the meal plans. People can still be active meat eaters. And just, it's just like, we're here to signal boost how great plants are in whatever, you know, whatever your dietary situation is, right? Because there's nothing wrong with eating more plants, no matter if you're an omnivore or vegan or a vegetarian. And so I just appreciate that, especially as crazy as social media can be, right? Mm. That group, as big as it is, and then even more so the Lighten Up group, because it's even more kind of intimate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But both of them, right, are even as big as Clean Food Dirty Girls Facebook group is, it still feels the moderators are great. Any large group's going to get out of hand sometimes, but even self-policing and just it feels positive and it feels welcoming and it feels like an okay place to hang out. And I during the height of COVID, I took a extended social media break. I haven't posted in the group in a while just because so much of social media felt so antagonistic, right? And it's like, I don't want to fight with you about why you don't want to wear a mask. I don't want to fight with you about, you know, and it's just like, I can't take this anymore. Yeah. So it's such a welcome kind of place to kind of lose some time in.
Make some
plant
friends.
Jokes and all. Yeah. Yeah.
I know there is that. Well, I have to say, you know, like coming into this, I was really excited to talk to you and I thought we were going to talk about food, but I have to say, like, I'm so glad we didn't really focus our time on that because this has been such a delicious talk. And this is exactly, I think people are going to love to hear this talk and
oh,
see
I appreciate
this.
That.
And I just thank you for being so open and so vulnerable and sharing yourself with me and with so many other people, because I know, I mean, you said something at the beginning of our talk saying like, or when you were talking about Lighten Up and talking about Lindsay and how she kind of just has that spark. And I have to say, like, that spark, you have that spark, you know, that is in you and you have it. So that thing, you know, whatever you're doing, keep it up because you really do radiate that. Like love and joy, and you're just a lover of life, and it's a joy to see, especially right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just want you to know that like you're definitely a really large part of that journey, right? And so I just want people to understand that like it just embrace the power of plant fuel life. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be pretty because life is messy and sloppy and we do all these things, but like seriously, just the knowledge that you've instilled in me, even through Lighten Up, I committed to doing everything, including the movements, which sometimes felt really hokey and like, love. But I'm all in, right? Like there's no denying.
What's the worst that can happen?
exactly. And my husband walks in like, what are you loving? Mm-hmm. And so, so just thank you for being a light for all of us and showing us again that like, it's not scary. We have some support and you just created a really great family and another tribe that I'm super proud to be a part of.
Awesome. Thanks again. It's been lovely.
Thanks, Molly. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. And thank you to Lou Antio and Brittany Shaver for producing the show. If you enjoy this podcast, I would love it if you could rate and review it. That would mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about our whole food plant-based meal plans, head on over to our website, cleanfooddirtygirl.com, and check them out. You can also pick up a ton of plant-based recipes and resources and get inspired to celebrate human imperfection because none of us are perfect. None of us, promise. And isn't that a relief? Oh my gosh. Okay, have a beautiful week and I'll talk to you again soon. Come alive in my body.